supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Delaware flags are flying at half-staff tonight in honor of a correctional officer killed during a hostage siege at the state's largest prison. Details from WHYY's Mark Eichmann.
On Wednesday afternoon, Perry Phelps was supposed to be sworn in to his new position as commissioner for the Delaware Department of Correction. Instead, he joined other state leaders responding to a nearly 19-hour-long hostage siege inside Vaughn Correction Center in Smyrna. This morning, he announced the death of correction officer Sergeant Stephen Floyd.
We lost one of our family members, and it pains my heart to make these statements.
Two other officers had been released by inmates earlier Wednesday night. A female counselor was rescued when police stormed the building just after 5 this morning. The inmates had used footlockers filled with water to barricade the door. Tactical teams used a backhoe to break through. Investigators are now going cell by cell trying to determine which inmates were involved in planning and executing the plot. Robert Koop, who heads up the Delaware Department of Safety and Homeland Security, says an investigation will look into what allowed the uprising to happen.
Prisons are very dangerous. Our officers train, our officers work together, they're very professional, but every day it's dangerous. There are things to look at. This will be looked at to see if, you know, is there policy, procedures, staffing, all those things would be considered.
Delaware Governor John Carney says he prayed all day Wednesday that the incident would end without death.
We also have to investigate what happened here, determine the facts to make sure that it never happens again. The best way that we can honor Sergeant Stephen Floyd is to do this work diligently, together, and expeditiously.
Supporters of prison guards, as well as those pushing for better conditions for inmates, protested outside the Vaughn Center, sometimes arguing over how officials should have responded differently. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney recently signed a law banning companies from asking potential hires about their past salaries. It's an attempt to close the gap between what men and women earn for the same work. Pay equity advocates are celebrating the measure, but WHYY's Bobby Allen reports that some business groups and employment experts warn of unintended consequences.
Alex Capano's a nurse practitioner in Philadelphia. Not too long ago, she was filling out a job application and was asked about her current salary. And she thought, would this affect her offer?
And I also wanted to know, you know, do they check up on this? How honest do I have to be? Am I setting myself up for kind of a lowball offer?
And that's what happened. So she turned down the job. Mariana Bellasorti says this happens all the time. She's with the Philadelphia anti-poverty advocacy group Pathways.
If a woman or a minority or really anyone goes into a job early in their career with a low income, that low income is going to follow them from place to place if they have to continue to disclose what they earned.
But Rob Wunderling says since no other city has tried this, there's no guarantee it's going to work. It's kind of a big experiment. Wunderling heads the Chamber of Commerce of Greater Philadelphia.
That is really not thoughtful, pragmatic, analytical public policy.
He also worries businesses will decide to open up shop elsewhere and that existing employers might flee the city, frustrated by what he says is another layer of government-mandated red tape.
We heard quite a bit about what I'll describe as the hassle factor.
At UPenn's Wharton School, Professor Peter Capelli studies HR department issues. He doesn't buy the argument that not asking a question will be a pain for employers, but he's skeptical the law will help close the gender pay gap. He says differences in what fields they choose is really the biggest driver of the earnings divide.
You know, women tend to be less inclined to go into the science and technology fields, engineering in particular, for example. What's going on there, and is there bias there? I think that would be a reasonable place to focus because that seems to matter a lot. You know, most of the aggregate difference between what men and women earn is because they're in different occupations.
But denying companies information, Capelli says, be careful what you wish for.
This is one of the problems when you deny people information that they want is they guess. And in this case, the guess is might make things worse.
He says they might guess some applicants are earning less than what they really are and give them a lower offer. Capano, the nurse, isn't convinced. She says if the guess is too low, people can always reject it. She says it's something women should do more often.
Women aren't told to or taught to negotiate as well as their male counterparts and are often feeling like they have to accept the first offer that comes their way.
When Philadelphia's law takes effect in May, salary history questions will become a real expense. If a company asks a salary history question, it could trigger a $2,000 fine per violation from the Human Relations Commission. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
What if every time a kid acted out at school, she got sent to take some deep breaths rather than serving a detention? Well, a program in Baltimore has been trying that out for the past few years to good results. WHYY's behavioral health desk reporter Ann Hoffman looks at least one school in Philadelphia that's interested as well.
Andy. Exhale now.
The empty room in Baltimore's Robert W. Coleman Elementary School looks a bit like a New Age spa. 9-year-old Dakari Crawford is showing me how to meditate.
You keep doing that until you feel perfectly calm to go back upstairs and do your work.
He's sitting on one of the miniature meditation pillows on the floor. Behind him are a table and chairs for conflict resolution. There's even a diffuser for essential oils.
Do you guys have orange peel in the diffuser?
Lemongrass,
nice.
Jamar Pete is a mindful moment teacher here, funded by the Holistic Life Foundation, a nonprofit that brings yoga and mindfulness to underserved communities. Pete says Dakari used to resist when adults tried to discipline him. Dakari admits he had a bad temper.
It was like one time when I was mad at the teacher, the kids in the classroom. I was so mad, I flipped all the desks and chairs.
After that incident, Dakari's teacher sent him to the Mindful Moment Room.
They brought me down here, and you know, I was too mad. I was yelling and screaming. They told me to sit down here and take a lot of deep breaths.
The meditation room isn't about punishment. It's about helping the child calm down and come back into himself. The school uses this method first, even for more serious problems, like when there's a fight. After that step, if necessary, the principal follows up with the student. The facilitators talk through situations with kids in a relaxed way. Together, they find a solution. Coleman Elementary is a Title I school, which means many of the families here are low income, and a lot of the kids have been through difficult experiences.
Trauma is real. It's around us. It's in our communities.
That's school principal Carlillian Thompson. She says the Holistic Life Foundation takes that reality into account.
And their whole mission is to say to children, yes, you could be facing knowing that someone that you love was killed, or you saw somebody's house burn down, or you experienced a situation that caused you to be upset or frightened. If you focus on yourself, and if you breathe and you meditate, it will help you to get through any situation.
After coming here when he needs to calm down for the past few years, Jamar Pete says things have changed for Dakari.
It's like he slowed down a little bit.
That doesn't surprise Professor Patricia Jennings, an associate professor of education at the University of Virginia. She studies how mindfulness can create more tranquil and more productive students and teachers. She says kids growing up in poverty who have more exposure to trauma and toxic stress can become more reactive.
Their nervous systems develop in a way that's adaptive in those contexts, but not so adaptive in school. That kind of reactivity or overreactivity can cause a lot of problems with learning.
It can also make kids more conflict prone because they're reacting more strongly to everyday events. Say a kid bumps into them in the hallway, they may interpret that as intentional aggression, Jennings says. Traditional punishment, like a detention or a suspension, can reinforce the idea that a kid is bad. Chances are the kid is already feeling bad about himself, she says, so it's likely they'll act out again.
Mindfulness rooms where kids have a chance to cool out, calm down, take some breaths, really settle themselves, and then have a caring adult help them think about what happened and talk about what happened, and then maybe find a way to resolve the problem in a thoughtful and calm way rather than an overreactive punishment can be really helpful.
Jennings says that's because two things are happening. One, kids are learning to self-regulate. And two, they're seeing that an adult cares about them and will work through something with them. In her eyes, it's a win-win. At El Centro de Estudiantes High School in North Philadelphia, students have had largely negative experiences with traditional schools, says their principal, Judon DeShields.
Many of our students come to us and said, I was someone who fought my previous school, I was someone who was bullied, I was someone who was constantly suspended or expelled.
He and other teachers work with students to create consequences, but also to keep them engaged in school. It's more about repairing what was broken and less about traditional punishment, he says.
If you make a mistake or if you display misconduct, it's not the end of the world. Like, there is an opportunity to make things better and to restore yourself to the community.
DeShields is interested in employing mindfulness techniques with his students, which the school already uses in their gym classes, thanks to donated yoga balls and mindfulness manuals from the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Some kids think it's a little silly, but he thinks the students would benefit overall.
The big thing with meditation and mindfulness is it allows students to slow down their thinking process, which allows them to then make choices that are going to put them in the best possible place.
He says much like the kids at Coleman Elementary in Baltimore, mindfulness could allow his students to slow down and make better choices. For WHYY News, I'm Ann Hoffman.
1,600 miles away in North Dakota, the Standing Rock Sioux have been fighting a proposed oil pipeline they worry could contaminate tribal lands. WHYY's Dana DeFilippo notes there's a similar fight unfolding much closer to home. And Dana, where is this pipeline fight that some are calling the next Standing Rock?
It's in Mahwah, a township in North Jersey just south of the New York line. The Ramapo tribe set up teepees in October on tribal land, initially as a show of solidarity with Standing Rock. They call it the Split Rock Sweetwater Prayer Camp. But the encampment turned into an environmental protest when the tribe learned more about the Pilgrim Pipeline that is planned in New York and New Jersey.
Tell me more about this Pilgrim Pipeline.
Well, the pipeline would be a 178-mile pipeline, parallel pipelines, actually, and they would carry Bakken crude oil from Albany, New York, down to a refinery in Linden, New Jersey, and then back again. The pipeline would cross Bergen, Morris, Union, Somerset, and Middlesex counties, so it's a big deal up there. Environmentalists worry that a spill could contaminate the drinking water for millions of people in New Jersey and New York. There's about 4,000 Ramapo who live on either side of the New York New Jersey border, and they're concerned that this pipeline and others threaten tribal land. The camp is on nearly 14 acres, and it's at the foot of the Ramapo Mountains. They've set up camp there on sacred ground that they've used for years to pray and gather and have ceremonies. Little Wolf, who is an Arawak Taino indigenous man who's staying at the Split Rock camp, says that Native people are being disproportionately affected by these pipelines.
The pipeline that is here is no different than the pipeline that is in Standing Rock or any of the other pipelines that are being laid around the country. It's almost like a perspective that's gone wild, and is going wild at the cost of a particular group of people. It's going wild at the cost of Native people, and it's not just here, it's all the way to the south. There is an obligation, there is a duty for us to stand and rise and say no.
Dana, Little Wolf is among how many people at the encampment?
It changes from day to day, from week to week. There's maybe a hardcore group of about a half dozen or so who have been staying there since October. There are others who circle in and out, a couple dozen groups from environmental groups, people who support the Native American cause.
Now, you've noted that the site abuts a mountain. Are there other homes in the vicinity as well?
So up on the hillside is a development of multi-million dollar mansions. And the people who live in those mansions aren't super happy, or some of the people aren't super happy with the prayer camp because they feel that they have built these teepees in a floodplain. And they're worried that if the river should rise, that will cause problems in terms of all the structures there being washed away.
Dana, now 3 months in, how is the protest going?
It's been a bumpy road for the Ramapo. Mahwah Township officials have ordered the tribe to take down their teepees. They gave the tribe citations with thousands of dollars in fines for code violations, everything from building permanent structures, which aren't allowed there, to building on a floodplain. The Ramapo's chief, Dwayne Perry, feels that this kind of opposition is rooted in racism.
I think you got one or two white supremacists lost their minds. And they're driving this sort of hate challenge that we're finding every day. Every time we've ever had a ceremony to pray, there's been a complaint coming down about assemble and make a noise, what are those people doing over there? So if it's not racism, it's certainly some form of anti-spiritual religious position.
The township and the tribe are sorting out this dispute now. The Ramapo say they have no plans to shut down this camp, at least not until the pipeline company abandons their proposal. And that company, which is called Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings LLC, they haven't filed for permits in New Jersey yet. Their New York filings remain in the very earliest stages.
And so can that sorting out ultimately take place in court?
It most likely will.
Thanks, Dana.
Thanks so much, Dave.
WHYY's Dana DeFilippo on Newsworks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. The acoustic guitar may be the quintessential American folk instrument, but it's also taken root in many other cultures around the world. And tomorrow evening, we'll hear some of those flavors when International Guitar Night pays us a visit. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.